Okay, I think we can start. Welcome, everybody. Nice to see you. And what can I say? We should all be well, and these are difficult times for everybody, uncertainty, and please God, we should all get through this in good health. Of course, the first Pesach in history, nobody could leave their house either. As the Torah tells us, Lo Yetzei Ish Mimkomo, that on the night of the original Pesach, no one could leave their home. So God could take Magepha, all the firstborn Egyptians, and then it was over by the next morning. So let's hope this ends you know, sooner than what we expect and we think. Okay, I'm going to talk for about half an hour today, a little bit less than our other shiurim coming up. And I want to sort of give a couple, I guess, overviews of the Haggadah. So I'm going to start by what's missing in the Haggadah. So we all know that Moshe's name is not mentioned in the Haggadah. The idea is that at the beginning of Jewish history, we wanted to impress upon the Jewish people, God, God, God. God is everything, and we are nothing. Now, this is, of course, quite fascinating because we just had the holiday of Purim, and Purim, of course, is the exact opposite. Purim is man, 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 and God is missing. And these are really two sides of the same coin. We begin our nationhood, obviously you can't tell a bunch of slaves about a hidden God, etc. They had to see God in full and light color. And therefore, we totally downplay the role of Moshe. I often say to tell the story of the Haggadah without mentioning Moshe is like telling the story of American independence without mentioning George Washington. It really doesn't make any sense, but that's not the point of the Haggadah, it's not the historical point. Purim is the exact opposite. Purim, the Jewish people have matured. And of course, we know that Purim is the last holiday of the year. And when we have two Adars, we have to celebrate Purim in the second Adar, even though it should be in the first Adar. Whenever we have a mitzvah, the idea is to do it as quickly as possible. The Gemara says, Gemara actually suggests that, of course, Purim should be an Adar Aleph. The reason Purim is another bait, the Gemara then responds, because we want to have the Geula of Purim and the Geula of Pesach next to each other. In other words, we want to bring together these two different and polar opposite types of redemption, one where God is the key player and one where man is the key player. And we know, of course, that Purim and a lot of the story of Purim took place on Pesach. Haman threw the lots on the 13th of Nisan, and the fast days were probably the first couple of days of Pesach. The Medrash picks up on this. The Jewish people abolished Pesach that year because they said, we're going to have you know, Pesach this year. That's the end of the Jewish people. Or we can cancel Pesach this year and have Pesach in the future years. So Purim and Pesach, they're polar opposite, but they're very intimately are connected to each other. And they're sort of, I would say, are the maturation of the Jewish people, from a nation that needs to see God. And of course, it's a much higher level to appreciate God when God is not there. That's why in rabbinic literature, Purim often has an extremely high level. Purim is viewed as Yom Kippurim. Yom Kippur is a day like Purim. Purim is the ultimate day of the recognition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, there's another thing that also changed on Purim. The Purim is the last of the period of prophecy. And usually this is viewed as something negative, that we lost our capacity to get close to God through prophecy. But in many ways, of course, this is actually a positive. A prophet tells us what we have to do. We just have to listen. It's not always easy. The prophet said, take care of the poor, feed the hungry, etc. But we didn't have to make a strategic type of a decision what direction to go. When the period of prophecy ended, it's like a child who grows up and leaves home. They have to make the decisions on their own. And the rabbis say that a chacham atif minavi, a sage is greater than a prophet. And we're, of course, in the period for the last, 2,000 years, the period of Purim. So Purim and Pesach are intimately connected. So on Pesach, we don't mention Moshe, and on Purim, we don't mention God. But I want to talk about one other missing figure in the Haggadah, if anybody wants to chime in. What other major figure, you can type it on the bottom, what other major figure is missing in the Haggadah? So the other person missing is Yosef. If we tell the story, and you could argue, okay, we're going to tell the story when we begin to leave Egypt, but that's not true. We talked about Yaakov and Laban, and we talked about Avram Avinu and Terach in a sense. So why is Yosef missing from the Haggadah? So the truth of the matter, there are two hints towards Yosef in the Haggadah. Yosef is alluded to right at the beginning and right at the end. Where is that? So the first place is in Karpas. So what does Karpas mean? So Rashi tells us when Yaakov made a ketonet pasim for Yosef. So what is the ketonet pasim? What's his fancy coat? So Rashi quotes, it's chur karpasu techelet. It's the chur karpasu techelet from Megillat Esther, Achashverosh, a fancy linen garment. So the idea of karpas, when we begin the Seder, although we normally associate karpas with a vegetable, Rashi is alluding to the fact that karpas is an allusion. Yosef reminds us of the fancy meal at Achashverosh. Of course, the Pesach meal is supposed to be the fanciest meal of the year. That's the first possible allusion. The second allusion is, of course, in Echad Miyodea, where Achadasar Kochvaya, the 11 stars in Joseph's dream. Now, that's not really part of the Haggadah. That's a much later medieval addition to the Seder. So why is Yosef missing? So the simple reason would be because we don't want to talk about Yosef on Pesach. Pesach is about developing our sensitivity towards other people. Ki geirima yitim beretz Mitzrayim. The Gemara says that 36 times, more than any other mitzvah in the Torah, we're commanded to be nice to the stranger because we were strangers in the land of Egypt, or despite the fact. The word ki in biblical Hebrew means because and despite. Very often people who have to suffer or go through hardship don't have so much mercy on other people because I went through it. If I went through it, you can go through it. So the Torah wants to say that's exactly what we don't want you to do. Just because you did it and survived is no reason to do it for another person. So we don't want to mention the whole purpose of the Exodus story and the Seder night is that we should develop our sensitivity towards other people. And Yosef, we want to make a little reminder when we begin the Haggadah. We don't even mention it. Chor karpas, just an allusion that we're, Yosef is the whole reason we went to Egypt. But that's not what we want to focus on. We want to focus on the other things.
Also, when we dip the karpas into the water, so that's also an allusion to the dipping of Yosef's coat into the blood.
Excellent. 100% correct. The dipping is reminiscent. Good. And of course, at the end, we mentioned. Now, this brings me to another beginning and end point in the Seder. The entire Seder is in Hebrew, right? There's only two Aramaic pieces. As a matter of fact, you have to say the Seder in a language you understand. It's a story. So the Balei HaTosfot actually quote one of the Balei HaTosfot who lived in London, England. And he says you have to say the Seder in English. For those who don't understand Hebrew, it's not like a mitzvah. Like when we daven, you're allowed to daven in any language, but it's ideal to daven in Hebrew, to sort of look at the English on the side. But that's not true at all in the Haggadah. There's no mitzvah to say the Haggadah at all in Hebrew. You don't understand Hebrew. So especially when you consider that, when the language is spoken was Aramaic, we took out Aramaic from the Haggadah. All the Haggadah is in Hebrew, except for Halachmanya and Chagadja. What are Halachmanya and Chagadja? These are the Halachmanya is also a later addition to the Haggadah, because Halachmanya is a lament. The Halachmanya, you know, everybody asks the question, why are we inviting guests now? We should invite them in Shul. We should invite them a week ago. Unfortunately, this year, it doesn't look like we can invite any guests. But so it's a very late time to invite somebody. But the truth of the matter, what Halachmanya says is that we're allowed to invite people now. When the Korban Pesach was brought, the original Pesach Seder, you had to pre-invite people. The Korban Pesach, by the time you slaughtered the Korban Pesach, you had to know who was eating with you. You were not allowed to invite people at the last minute. So halach manya is a lament. You know, we're starting the Seder. It's not going to be the original Seder. We're missing a Korban Pesach. And we can therefore invite anybody to eat the matzah. And Aramaic, of course, is the language of the exile. In Hebrew, Israel in the, goes with Hebrew. Aramaic represents, even though I know they spoke Aramaic in Israel, but Aramaic as a symbol is the representative of the exile. So when we begin the Seder, we remind ourselves we're in exile. But then on the Seder night, we float in redemption. The Seder night, we forget the exile, where, you know, we're kings and four cups of wine and fancy meals and people serve us. And we sort of leave, we're going to a new state where we feel, you know, as high level redemption as we can. And then right as we end the Seder, Chagatya, we end the Seder, we're coming back to earth. You know what? It's very nice, but it's not the reality. The reality is things are not as they should be. And what's, of course, you know, we sing at Chagatya like it's a nice song, you know, and they make it, how quickly you can do it, you make all the sounds. But the real thing, it's a real sad song. Everybody eats somebody else, you know, the little Jew gets swallowed up by this guy who gets swallowed up by them, by swallowed up by them. So the Haggadah bookends us into sort of a negative exile type experience. It's in Aramaic. Yosef is the beginning of the end, but the middle is a beautiful part of the Haggadah. That's, of course, the main part. Okay, any questions or comments? And I apologize for my voice. I'll try to speak a little bit slower and we'll do a little bit less. But any questions or comments? Okay. I want to mention, talking about switches in the Seder, a very fascinating piece by Rav Mordechai Breuer. Rav Mordechai Breuer was the great-grandson of Shimshon Fell Hirsch. He passed away 10, 15 years ago. I heard him once talk in Israel. He wrote the book, two-volume work, Pirkei Moedot. It's a very creative thinker and really one of the forerunners of the whole style of learning of Tanakh in Israel that they have today, the Tanakh Begov Einayim, the literary approach to the study of Tanakh. He was really one of the founders of this method. And he has a fascinating essay in his two-volume work on the holidays. We're back to Karpas. What is Karpas? Why do we eat Karpas? Is Karpas a delicacy? Or is it we're dipping it in salt water, it's tears, it reminds us of Yosef, which, or is it the introduction to a fancy meal? So Rav Breuer, and it's a very long article, Rav Breuer explains it, what happened is that Karpas is the place where the rabbis changed the nature of the Seder. He says, initially, during the time of the temple, the first thing you did at the Seder was eat. Why is that? Because you had to eat the Korban Pesach before midnight. And everybody knows that. You have to eat the Korban Pesach. And we eat today. Supposed to eat the Afikoman, but it's not exactly the same. It's okay if you eat the Afikoman after Chatzot. So there was a fear that people would get too caught up in the story and they would go beyond midnight, which is why the Haggadah puts the story of the five rabbis in Bnei Brak, which, of course, is the generation after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. These are the leaders in Yavneh, right after the temple is destroyed. And the Haggadah puts that story there as a beautiful thing to tell the story all night, but also as a reminder, the fear that what could happen if you get too involved in the story. They went, it was no problem for them to go all night. There was no temple. There was no Korban Pesach. So they went all night till the morning. And then the morning's over, their students came. So Mordechai Breuer explains that you had to eat first. And so what do you do when you eat? You make Kiddush, you wash, and in temple times they had to wash for anything they dipped in liquid, even vegetables. That's why we wash our hands nowadays. We're reliving what happened in the temple. And they ate Karpas, and they brought the meal, and they ate the meal. And after they finished the Korban Pesach at 10 o'clock at night, then they told the Haggadah. So Karpas made a lot of sense. Remember, why does the Gemara say we eat Karpas? The Gemara says we eat Karpas Kadeshi Shalu Hatinokut. So children should ask. So I remember many years ago when my niece was like 8 years old, she now lives in Efrat with her four kids. So I remember she was at the Pesach Seder. So he said, why do we eat karpas? So the kids should ask. So my niece says, okay, why do we eat karpas? And of course, the Gemara never gives a reason why we eat karpas. The kids should ask, but they don't actually answer the question. And Reb Breuer explains the answer is that because the karpas was normal. There was nothing to ask. The karpas was the introduction to the meal. Nobody asked any questions. They make Kiddush, they wash, they ate karpas, the rest of the meal. When the temple was destroyed, they wanted to remind us that things are different. So they split it. We know we don't eat before we hear shofar. We don't eat before the Megillah. We don't eat before we daven. We're supposed to always do the mitzvah before we eat. So you should do the story of the Haggadah before you eat. We don't have to worry about the Korban Pesach. So they switched the Haggadah from the after the meal to before the meal. But in order to remind us of what's going on, they split it after karpas, so kids should ask questions. That doesn't make any sense. Why are we eating the beginning of the meal? And the way most people today eat only, you know, less than an olive, a very small piece. And then they used to take away the Seder plate. Why are we doing that? So that was so the kids should ask. And therefore you would explain to them that things are very different. It's a very nice explanation. Although I'm not sure how many people would know to answer this question, you know, when the kids ask. But that's how he explains that karpas therefore transitioned, marks our transition from the Seder of great joy, a very festive meal with the Korban Pesach, to the Seder when the experience that we're in exile, where we no longer have the Korban Pesach. And of course, that could be why we eat an egg. You know, I assume most people eat an egg right after we eat the matzah and the matzah maror and korach, eat an egg. And in the egg, there are various reasons. Some say the korban chagiga, but some say it's a reminder of Tisha B'Av. We know that egg is the food of mourning. We serve, unfortunately, mourners eggs because eggs are round, the cycle of life. And we know that the way our calendar is established, we have Atbash, that the first night of Pesach is always the first night of Tisha B'Av on the calendar. So this year, Tisha B'Av will be on a Thursday, because that's, again, the reminder. We want to have these little reminders that we're in exile. Or if we pick up on what we were talking about before, that the main purpose of the Haggadah is to remind us to be sensitive to the poor, be sensitive to the stranger, ki gerim ha'itim be'eretz Mitzrayim. So, of course, Tisha B'Av is the exact opposite. And Tisha B'Av and Pesach become Aleph and Taf, A and Z, the two opposite letters of the alphabet. We have to do the Pesach right so we don't have Tisha B'Av. So that's how Mordechai Breuer explains the whole structure of the Haggadah. I don't know if it's historically true. I think some scholars question the historicity of that. I don't know. But I think it's the idea is a very, very powerful and beautiful idea. Okay. The next thing I want to do is also discuss something that, I don't know, many of you may have heard this already. This is Rav Rimon, Rav Yosef Tzvi Rimon, who is the Rav on Alon Shvut in Israel. I'm sure many of you have seen, I hope many of you have seen his wonderful Sfarim. He writes so beautifully with charts and everything he's explained so beautiful. So in his Haggadah, I have here the summary of the Seder. he basically explains that the Haggadah tells the story four ways. You know, there are four children. Four is one of the magic numbers of the Haggadah. It's not the only magic number of the Haggadah. But we have four children, four questions, four cups of wine. So he says that even Magid, the telling of the story, we view it as one sort of long piece, is really four stories to represent, because everybody learns in a different way. Every child has to be taught, every adult has to be taught very differently, and different methods of learning appeal of work on different people. And he explains that the way the Seder is structured is you have question, story, thanksgiving. We begin with the question four times in that Haggadah. We begin with the question, then we tell four stories or four ideas, and then we say four times Hakara Tov, four times thank you to God. So what's the first set of questions, of course? Manishtana. Then we tell a story about the Mayinu. We were slaves to Paro. By the way, just as a side point, Avadim Ayinu is in what where does Avadim Ayinu appear in the Chumash? It doesn't appear in Sefer Shmot. It appears in Sefer Dvarim, which is where much of the Haggadah comes from. It's actually the answer to the Chacham. The Chacham's quote, we don't tell him in the Torah, you know, don't eat after the Afikoman. That's the rabbinic answer. That's a whole other shir we have to talk about. But Avadim Ayinu in the Torah is the answer to the Chacham, but the authors of the Haggadah removed it from the answer to the Chacham and put it here, which is, we have to know why, but for another time. So we ask the questions, the four questions. We were slaves, and then we say Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu. Then we say, Chacham Mahu Omer, Rasha Mahu Omer, Tam Mahu Omer, right? We ask the question of the Chacham. Then we begin the story, Baruch Shomer Haftachto Yisrael. God, I'm sorry, Mitchila Avdei Avodah Zarah Hayu Avoteinu. Our forefathers were idol worshippers. I always ask, of course, which of our forefathers was an idol worshipper? Of course, Avram Avinu was brought up as an idol worshipper. And the whole other idea, but probably because he was an idol worshipper, is how he became to worship God. In other words, someone who has no religious background is less likely to be interested in God. Somebody who's worships false gods, other gods, many gods, can be trained, hopefully, to come to the true God. But that's Mitchila Avdei Avodah Zarah. So we have the question of the Chacham, the Rasha. We tell the story that our ancestors were idol worshippers. Then God brought us to our Sinai. And then we say, thank you, God. Baruch Shomer Haftachto Yisrael. God keeps his promise to the Jewish people. The third story, which again begins question, Ma Bikesh Lavan Harami Lasot Yaakov Avinu. What did Lavan want to do? Ask the question. And then we have the what sort of is considered the main part of Magid, Aram Yomi Rabbi. We take the four verses that the farmer would say six, but the Haggadah takes four of the six verses that the farmer, when he brought the Bikurim on beginning on Shavuot, would say, this is the link from Pesach to Shavuot, that the farmer would bring the first fruits and tell the synopsis of Jewish history. We went down to Egypt, we cried out to God, God took us out, he brought us to this wonderful land, and here are my first fruits. So that last part we don't say at the Seder. So that's the story. And then we sing Kama Malot Tovot Aleinu. Then we sing Kayenu. That's the Thanksgiving. And the fourth set of questions is Rabban Gamliel Omer. Matzah Al Shuma, Pesach Al Shuma, Maror Al Shuma. Why do we have Pesach, Matzah, Maror? And then we tell the story, we give the answer, why we eat Pesach, why we eat Matzah, why we eat Maror. And then we say, L'fichach anachu chayavim lehodot l'halal l'shaveach l'fer. So four times the Haggadah tells, it's so obvious when you first hear it, but I for many years I went to the Haggadah and I never noticed it, that the Haggadah is told four different times, question, story, Thanksgiving. Now, of course, what's the difference between these four? So the first set is all physical, right? Why do we eat matzah? Why do we eat why do we lean? Why do we dip? So it's all about eating. It's all about physical. And what's the answer? We were slaves to Egypt. The first step in freedom, of course, is our physical freedom. If we're not physically free, we can't have anything. So the Haggadah starts with a series of physical questions, and that's we have to take care of the physical needs of others, especially in these hard times. And so that's the first story of Pesach, is the physical access. And that's probably, if you go on the street, or they say on the news, you know, it's the Seder night, they talk on the news what Pesach is all about. It's a holiday of freedom. The Jews were redeemed. That's the basic story. The second story, the Chacham, the Rasha, the Tam, Sheino Yadei Lishol, okay, that's already what the purpose, that's a spiritual story. Mitchila Avdei Avodah Zarah Hayu Avoteinu. Our ancestors worshiped idols. We're not telling the spiritual story. The physical has to lead to a spiritual renaissance. Just to have freedom without purpose to freedom is, you're missing a lot. So that's the second story. The third story, Ma Bikesh Lavan Arami, Arami Oved Avi, and that's the more, I don't know what to call it, the more boring part of the Seder. It's the part we've seen, at least, I don't know, where my experience, we tend to go through it a lot more quickly. You know, it's a little bit later, and it's a little bit more, you know, examining every word. This is the Seder for the intellectual. This is the Seder of Talmud Torah. There's the Seder, the physical freedom, the philosophy Seder. Why did we have to experience slavery? What do we do for our freedom? What does it mean? What does it mean to free in a modern world? Every generation, we have to feel as if we left Egypt. So in every generation, we have to apply the lessons of Egypt. And the third one, these are the guys, they're the guys and the girls in yeshiva. They want to understand all the nuance. Where do we learn this from? How do we know it? And the fourth telling of the story, Rabbi Gamliel Omer, why do we eat matzah? That's what I would call the audiovisual. Many, we lift up the matzah, we lift up the maror, and we say, look here, it's the experiential part of the Seder. We're going to eat the matzah, we're going to eat the maror. Today we don't eat the Pesach. So that's the experiential part of the Seder, and this all four are necessary. Certain people, they specialize, you know, in one of these four areas. But the truth of the matter is, all four of these areas are needed, and that's the, you see that over you, it just makes the Seder flow so beautifully. So that's the second part. Okay, just to review, I mentioned this year will only be, I said approximately half an hour. Our shiurim next week will be pretty much an hour. I think, you know, you should have all the schedule. I'll send it out again. Unfortunately, listen, we're all at home, or I think many of us are at home. Some maybe are not, essential services, but we have to make the best of the situation, and we should hope, listen, we're going to develop our relationships with our family. Pesach is a home-based holiday, of course, not just the first Pesach, like I began with. We weren't allowed to leave our houses in Egypt, but Pesach is based in the home, and Judaism is based on the home. You know, the Ramban and Rashi argue about the Mishkan, which, of course, is this week's Parsha. Why do we have the Mishkan? And, you know, Jewish life changed tremendously when the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. But it was Rabbi Akiva in the last Mishnah in Yuma who said how lucky the Jewish people are. We can look up. We have heaven. We don't need all this Yom Kippur stuff. We don't need a Seirah Mishtaleach. It's okay. You can do tshuva without the Beit HaMikdash. We can live without the Beit HaMikdash. And in many ways, we're discovering now how we're going to be living without shuls for a while. But worse than that, or connected to that, of course, is the community coming up together. Thank God that at least today we can come together through internet, and you know, it's amazing. I don't know if this happened 20 years ago, people would really go out of their mind. I think this is at least we have this, but let us hope that something positive can come from this, and you know, we'll all gain from the experience, and those who are sick should have a refuah, and we should find a vaccine, a cure, whatever we need. But just so just to very, very quickly review what we discussed that why Moshe is missing from the Haggadah, and that corresponds to why God is missing from Purim, the two elements of redemption, the two styles, one God-focused and one man-focused. And then we discussed why Yosef is missing, and Yosef is hinted to only because Yosef is insensitivity of brothers. We have to remind ourselves very, very subtly of Yosef, but the story of Pesach is a sensitivity. We invite the Russia to come and join us at the Seder. And then we discussed Mordechai Breuer's like piece, how the Seder changed after the Haggadah, moving the meal to the beginning, from the beginning to the end, because of the fear, the no longer fear that you will eat the Korban Pesach much later. And the karpas became the symbol, got transferred from the appetizer to a fancy meal to a sad food that we dip in salt water. And then we discussed Mordechai Breuer's explanation, the four stories of the Haggadah, question, story, Thanksgiving. So we'll stop here. Please God, we'll have a class next Friday at 9:30. We have classes every day next week, 11 in the morning and 8:30 in the evening. And I want to wish everybody a wonderful Shabbat, a meaningful Shabbat, a healthy Shabbat, and we should all be well. And Benisa Nigalu, and let's hope there's a Geula, at least for sure on the physical level, a Geula. This Nissan too. Everybody be well and Shabbat Shalom. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.